The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, I'm Derek Frost for the North Carolina Reading Service. For the next hour, I'll be reading to you from the Triangle Business Journal. Today's program is generously underwritten by Brian Lee Funeral Homes, located in Raleigh, Garner, and Anger. They can be reached at 919-832-8225. They believe every life is unique and deserves to be honored so that every funeral is as unique and special as the person it represents. And we start on the front page of the Triangle Business Journal with the cover story headline, In Desperate Need to Solve the Puzzle. Seven small business owners in the Triangle area talk about the operational challenges and opportunities as the economy struggles to reopen with full force. And the article begins inside the Triangle Business Journal with a second headline, Surviving the Turmoil. Editor's note. One of the U.S. government's most ambitious small business assistance programs essentially came to a close on June 30 when the $660 billion Paycheck Protection Program shut off its spigot for new loans. While there's still about $130 billion left in the program, more than 4.6 million businesses received the PPP money through their lenders between April and June. For the ones that received the money early on, the PPP assistance is almost gone. With states fighting to keep COVID-19 under control and losing the battle in many instances, there's a growing concern that the PPP money may just not be enough to keep millions of businesses from going under in the next few weeks. So Triangle Business Journal decided to talk to seven businesses around the area to check on their financial, operational, and mental statuses as they tackle summer and approach fall months. As you will notice throughout this special feature, businesses are still worried, even if things have improved in some instances. But almost all the company owners agree on one thing. Consumer confidence needs a boost before businesses notice spikes in revenue. And first we start with Kyle Dennis, Apex Outfitter and Board Company. Kyle Dennis, owner of Apex Outfitter and Board Company, received a call from his security company at 9 p.m. on the final Saturday in May and learned there was activity at his store in downtown Raleigh. When he arrived, a group of about 14 people that included a couple of his employees were standing in front of the West Hargett Street store defending it from a riot. As the night dragged on, it became clear the crowd would make their way inside. Dennis thanked those defending his store but asked them to leave for their own safety, and then he barricaded the shop as best he could. But over the next several hours, looters stole merchandise and set fires in the shop. When Dennis returned the next morning, one of the store's mannequins melted by the flames was in the street. It was just a shell of what was there, he says. Dennis says he lost nearly $150,000 in inventory that night, but Dennis says his biggest concern isn't what was lost, but how they will rebuild. Apex Outfitters Raleigh location had already closed its doors for 2 months amid the pandemic. Now, he says, it will be another 2 months at best before the establishment can open again in Raleigh. Even if the insurance company comes tomorrow and hands me a check for everything, he says. It's extremely hard to get any inventory right now with coronavirus because a lot of states are just in the beginning stages of opening back up, he says. Dennis typically places orders for each retail season 12 months in advance. Many suppliers are canceling orders for products and are unable to move inventory quickly because of trade uncertainty. His entire 12-member team is working at the Apex store for now. Dennis says the Apex location has been fortunate to continue receiving support from the community, but he worries the entire small business economy in downtown Raleigh will suffer until larger companies return to work. If those skyscrapers are empty and there's nobody in there working, then there's nobody buying anything, Dennis says. There's nobody sitting down and buying sandwiches and having lunch or buying gifts from our store. The fourth quarter is the most important source of revenue for a retail company such as Apex Outfitter, and revenue during that quarter typically more than doubles revenue made during any other time of the year. Dennis and his team must decide how much inventory to anticipate for the holiday season amid the continuing uncertainty. No one wants to get caught with hundreds of thousands of dollars of inventory, and then there's nobody out there doing Christmas shopping, Dennis says. The company managed to secure around $50,000 in the Paycheck Protection Program loan, but the loan by itself is not a sustainable source of income for a retail company with a large overhead. It's been extremely hard, but it has been totally reassuring that it has, and it has given us hope to see Raleigh, Apex, Cary, and the Triangle community rally around us, Dennis says. And that was written by Matthias Miller. Desiree Palmer, Bull City Dental. For the last 3 months, Desiree Palmer and her staff have been racing to adapt their dental business to meet the needs of customers amid the ongoing crisis. Palmer owns and operates her two practices, Desiree T. Palmer, DMD, PA and Associates, and Bull City Dental, which she founded in 1985 and 2015, respectively. Operations all but ceased this spring when state and local officials shut down non-essential businesses and ordered residents to stay home as much as possible. It was about the second week of March, and we decided to close down and only offer emergency services, Palmer says. I have an associate downtown, Dr. Audrey Kemp, and she basically took emergency calls and triaged patients and saw patients during this time we've been shut down. Palmer and her staff threw themselves into research on the virus and how to adapt. We did not reopen until May 18, she says. During that time, we were doing webinars and studying and doing as much as we could to understand the virus and what we needed to do to protect our patients. We spent hours and hours tracking down PPE, personal protective equipment. Dental health requires contact with patients' mouths, and Palmer says the main concern was the aerosol created by dental tools when working with patients. Palmer arrived in Durham in the 1980s after spending 5 years post-dental working at a clinic in Boston and serving underserved communities as part of the National Public Health Service Corps. She originally planned to become a high school biology teacher until a professor encouraged her to consider dentistry, citing the field's growing opportunities for women. Following dental school, she worked at the clinic, providing care to the underserved residents until the Boston clinic lost funding. Shortly after, Thomas Bass asked Palmer about joining his Durham practice. She then moved to Durham with her husband and two sons, and Palmer launched her own practice in 1985, quickly building an all-women office. It started off with a bang, Palmer says. I was able to be involved in the design of the office and be able to hire all other women that were part of my team. It went really well. In 2015, Palmer opened Bull City Durham downtown as the city was booming. My husband and I were just walking downtown, and he was telling me all the things happening in Durham, and I said, oh, would that be nice to start something in downtown Durham, Palmer says. I went home and did some research and found out there were really no dentists in downtown Durham that could serve the community in Durham and those working in Durham. This year, Palmer has 20 people across her offices. Today, Palmer says things are slowly starting to open back up, with staff working shorter hours, with fewer patients at a time, and a wide variety of protective protocols in place. We take temperatures. We've had to limit our appointments. We have a lot of coverings and purifiers and gowns. We're all wearing gowns, Palmer says. Dental care, oral health care is so important, so a lot of patients that were not able to get in are feeling more comfortable coming out as long as those precautions are put in place. The business secured funds from the second round of the Paycheck Protection Program, and while Palmer declined to disclose the full amount, she says it was enough to prevent any layoffs. That has helped, Palmer says. Not being here for 2.5 months, there was no income, and we still continued to pay our bills and rent. Despite the challenges, Palmer says customers continue to come in and set up appointments as much as possible. Still, she says it's a ways off from what it once was. Patients have been very responsive, and once they've come, they've been appreciative and complimentary to us about taking all these precautions, Palmer says. They are coming back, but I think any dentist you talk to, you're lucky to be back 50%. But our patients are showing up. And that was written by Caleb Harshberger. And the next article, written by Lauren Onosorge, interviews Trey Walters, Blue Line Aviation. Just a few months ago, Trey Walters, founder of flight school Blue Line Aviation, was speaking out against rising parking charges at Raleigh-Durham International Airport, as unbeknownst to him, a bigger potential threat to his bottom line was spreading, COVID-19. They took all that parking from us in the airline boom, and now we're the only people in their parking lot, he says of RDU. Walters, the outspoken president of a company that for years has been trying to fill a seemingly endless pilot shortage, says his company has fared better than most, setting records in sales as it grinds along. While charter business has been decimated, people still want to learn to fly, he says. From what I can hear from air traffic control, we're basically keeping them open, Walters adds. From April until about 2 weeks ago, there was basically nothing going on at the airport. No charter flying, he says. Charter flying has started to pick up, but restrictions coupled with the general fear held by passengers of traveling amid the virus's spread has packed a sizable dent in the travel industry. In the early days of the pandemic, Walter says he didn't know how that would impact his specific niche. It's a vulnerable time for Walters' firm as it prepares to break ground on a new headquarters operation at the Johnston County Airport, one that will move the bulk of its operation out of RDU. This whole thing was quite terrible timing with the closing of our building, he says, and businesses didn't stop, even as much attention had to go toward the new operation. That's as, on average, his company does 6,000 to 8,000 takeoffs and landings in a month. So when the bank contacted company officials about the Paycheck Protection Program, Walters and team leapt at the opportunity. We did it as a safeguard, he says, of the $265,000 the firm received, all of which should be forgiven, says Chief Financial Officer Megan Robinson. The cash helped the firm facilitate the legalities involved in the new building, as well as to keep operating, he says, noting that all that stands between Blue Line Aviation and construction on the new hangar complex is paperwork, which has been delayed due to administrative issues with its grant. Walters, a former police officer and a veteran of the Iraq War, began the flight school with a small business loan and a single airplane. Today, the company, which has 33 employees, continues to hire pilots. It just purchased two new airplanes and has four new employees starting in the next few weeks. The firm has hired seven new flight instructors since the start of the pandemic. The three-story facility, announced 2 years ago, comes with a rooftop restaurant. Johnston County had received a $4 million grant to build infrastructure in support of the project. Henry House, University Florist. One of the oldest businesses in Chapel Hill is University Florist, which has been delivering roses and orchids since the days Charlie Choo Choo Justice roamed Keenan Stadium and Dean Smith was a kid in a Kansas high school. But even a business that has blossomed since 1946 faces challenges in the current pandemic. University Florist is located right next to the University of North Carolina on Franklin Street, and businesses along the Triangle's university corridors thrive on the bustle of a collegiate environment. For now, University Florist has closed its shop to walk-in traffic. Henry House, whose father Charles bought the business in 1979, says the business has been fairly lucky because so much of its business comes from phone calls and website traffic. But still, even one of Chapel Hill's most resilient shops peers into the future and wonders where this is headed. Everybody's scared. I'm scared. I'm not ashamed to admit that, House says. But I'm strong. I'm willing to do whatever needs to be done. It's going to get done. House is still busy and happy to take any order, and he sets out to deliver flowers while he balances, taking care of his two-year-old. There's nothing too big and nothing too small, he says. I'm just happy people are still calling. Generally, 90% of University Florist's business comes from phone calls or the web, with only 10% from walk-in traffic. But even with that, the spring was a tough one. The graduation events at UNC are usually a big source of revenue for the shop, and those were canceled. And of course, weddings and other spring staple have been postponed or downsized. May is a huge month, he says. All of graduation was canceled and the university was closed. There were no ceremonies, and each individual college in the university has its own graduation. We supply each of those colleges. We definitely missed it. Mother's Day was a little bit off, but that's always a residential thing anyway. My main thing was, send mom flowers. You know she's going to be home. House says many corporate events have been delayed but not canceled, and that should help down the line. House has three other full-time employees and some part-timers as needed, and University Florist has the advantage of owning its building. Many shops on Franklin Street are tenants and depend on pedestrian traffic to help them survive with high rents. Despite the challenge, House is determined to remain upbeat. I'm in the business of delivering smiles and happiness, he says. If I've got a frown on my face, it defeats the purpose. And that was written by Dane Huffman. The next article is on Christy Neistat, Raleigh Brewing. For Christy Neistat, this past March contained plenty of black clouds. The co-owner of Raleigh Brewing Company had to make many difficult decisions during those weeks, including closing the brewery and the adjacent shop, Atlantic Brew Supply, to keep her employees safe. We knew there was an option to do curbside, but we already had several of our staff worried, Neistat says. The management didn't feel they had all the right protocols in place and so decided right away not to do curbside. We decided to take a few steps back, she says. While many other local breweries adapted to curbside and even limited delivery services, Raleigh Brewing relied heavily on its grocery store sales of its flagship six-packs in the likes of the Belgian Golden Ale, Hell Yes Ma'am, and the American Wheat Ale, the First Squeeze. Our grocery store sales picked up over 300%, and that worked with having the right distributor, which is Freebird Distribution, Neistat says. The Raleigh-based distribution company focused specifically on craft beverages, unlike other local distributors who focus more on getting the macro beers on the shelves at grocery stores and gas stations. Working with Freebird almost compensated for the sales of our beer in bars and restaurants that were closed, she says. Just like many breweries across the nation, Raleigh Brewing had to pour out many gallons of stale beer, as hoppy beer such as pale ales and IPA saw their days come to an end. Anything that was pre-kegged before COVID, we lost, Neistat says. If the beer was in the tanks, we had the chance to can them. We were also able to buy that beer back from the restaurants. We don't want people to have to drink bad beer. Then came Governor Roy Cooper's phase two, when breweries could open with limited capacity and plenty of regulations. Raleigh Brewing didn't open its Neal Street location right away. As Neistat says, the current phase came to light at 5 p.m. on May 22, and the brewery just wasn't ready. We were eventually able to open to the public the Thursday after Memorial Day weekend, she says. Today, Raleigh Brewing has both its Neal Street location and its new tap room at the Arboretum in Cary open and running at the current 50% occupancy. And while the Raleigh location is bringing in customers, Neistat says the Cary location still needs a little more help. Not being able to have a grand opening and the ribbon cutting with Cary, which is being delayed until August, has made it a slower ramp up, she says. Darius and Terencia Russell, Russell's Pharmacy. Darius Russell has always dreamed of opening his own pharmacy right in the heart of the community where he met his high school sweetheart, Terencia, his now wife of 23 years and co-owner. I've wanted ever since I was in pharmacy school to eventually own my own pharmacy, he says. After more than 14 years working as a pharmacist outside of school, Darius, 47, and Terencia, 46, said it was either now or never. I'm not young or not that young anymore, so my wife and I said if we really are going to go for this dream, then we need to do this sometime soon, he says. So the North Carolina School of Science and Math and UNC Chapel Hill graduates decided to hang a shingle in East Durham, naming it Russell's Pharmacy and Shop. The store opened in late 2018 with Darius Russell running the pharmacy operations and Terencia Russell, a registered technician, assisting and managing the front of house operations. They have three other employees. In that first year, Russell says the store steadily grew, if a bit slower than he first imagined, but well within his expectations that it would take some time to prosper. Then came COVID-19 and an unprecedented lockdown. At first, the panic led to a spike in business, he says, as customers scrounged for supplies that were disappearing from shelves across the country. We initially had an uptick in over-the-counter sales because of COVID. Everyone was trying to get their preparatory things, he says. But eventually, even the wholesalers that the Russells bought their goods from were running dry, and the panic buying slowly trickled away. I don't know if I could say that we would have exponentially grown by now if COVID had not happened. I can't say necessarily that we would have doubled the amount of prescriptions per day in volume that we would need to be able to sustain ourselves, Darius Russell says. But the lack of traffic meant fewer people were discovering the pharmacy, and the lockdowns meant more customers were interested in the delivery of their medicine instead of coming in and possibly purchasing other items as well. Typically, with new businesses, it takes them 2 to 5 years to thrive, he says, and with the slow growth already happening, it has been at that point where we have really tried to fight to make sure that we continue to stay afloat and be able to be sustainable and continue as a business. The company was one of many that received funding from the Paycheck Protection Program. While the couple declines to say how much they received, they say it made it more feasible to continue and allowed them to pay themselves, which in the early days they had to stop doing. With the pandemic likely to remain for many long months ahead, the Russells now find themselves struggling to grow their dream right in the middle of a situation that Darius Russell says is emblematic of his belief in independent community pharmacies. And that was written by Seth Thomas Gulledge. And next we have an article by Cameron Snipes on Adam Saad, rush hour karting. On March 30, Adam Saad decided to close the doors to his indoor go-kart racetrack and meeting facility in Garner after Governor Roy Cooper issued a stay-at-home order for North Carolinians. But even before then, Saad's corporate business had all but dried up due to COVID-19, and the entity was operating cash flow negative. Even though his business, Rush Hour Karting, was barely being kept alive by scant walk-in traffic in mid-March, Saad kept many of his employees busy by providing free lunches to area kids in need and their parents. That continued for 10 days and resulted in more than 700 meals being given away. After the facility closed, Saad again pivoted. He deep-cleaned the facility and made updates and repairs, including remodeling the lobby and go-karting area. "This cost me tens of thousands of dollars, but was worth it considering how the world has changed and our new norms," Saad says. Rush Hour Karting then received a $120,000 Paycheck Protection Program loan in mid-April, which was both a blessing and a curse, Saad says. "It was actually a double-edged sword for us," he says. Being forced to initially use 75% of the money on payroll expenses, Saad says he was paying employees that didn't have enough work to do. "Instead, I should have been using this money to pay the essential bills such as mortgage, utilities, notes, payable, etc., Saad says. "And then they changed the rules to make it more effective in the ways I was just describing. I just wasted away almost $100,000 that I should have allocated a lot differently." Saad says two of his vendors reached out to him automatically to help out, his bank and his parts distributor. The bank deferred his mortgage payment on the facility for 3 months. His parts vendor gave him 50% off any parts he needed for 1 month. Saad says he had to reach out to his other vendors to ask for extended terms, which most were willing to do. Now Rush Hour Karting is back open and doing surprisingly well, Saad says. Corporate business is still nil, but walk-in traffic has been more than steady. "Individually and with small groups, my business is better than ever," Saad says. Saad adds that he has been putting a renewed emphasis on cleanliness and sanitation for customers. He says he's buying more equipment to concentrate on keeping things clean than ever before. That has led to different conversations with a few more of the entity's vendors. It has been more about cleaning and sanitizing and providing safety amenities to customers. For example, shifting from basic head socks that go under racing helmets to full-faced head socks with built-in face shields. Saad has confidence business will once again return to normal. "It's about people's confidence in us retailers and businesses doing everything we can to keep them safe and their desires to leave the house finally," he says. And now we turn to Biz, a quick glance at Triangle Happenings, written by managing editor Dane Huffman. New condos are set to rise at Raleigh's Cameron Village. More condos are coming to the area around Cameron Village as that part of town continues to fill in. Construction is set to begin soon on the Stevenson, with units priced from the high $300,000s to $600,000. Lock 7 Development, out of Washington, D.C., is developing the 20-unit contemporary condo community that is named after a downtown variety store specializing in musical instruments that started in 1907 and moved to Cameron Village in the 1950s. Units will vary in features and layouts, with each coming with access to a rooftop terrace, complete with outdoor kitchen, gas grills, fire pit, and more. Condo layouts will range from a 639-square-foot one-bedroom option to a 1,314-square-foot three-bedroom option, and certain units will come with flex spaces and private balconies. The Stevenson is an exciting project to us because the location is the perfect mix between a quiet residential neighborhood but literally a block away from shopping and dining. You really get the best of both worlds, says Dave Gorman, principal of Lock 7 Development. Additionally, the site has windows on all four sides, which is rare for infill development, he says. I'm thrilled we were able to incorporate so many opportunities to get outside, both through balconies and a huge communal roof deck. Confederate cannons land at Fort Fisher. Here's an idea that makes sense. The cannons at the Confederate Monument on Raleigh's Hillsborough Street have landed at Fort Fisher. The cannons were originally at Fort Caswell, located on Oak Island, and another fort that protected the waterway to Wilmington. With the monument to Confederate soldiers in Raleigh being dismantled, the 32-pound cannons were sent to Fort Fisher, which is undergoing a $23 million renovation. Remember Bubs and Trolls? That spot could rise again. A Chapel Hill location known for being a hangout for University of North Carolina students could become one again. A building at 157 East Rosemary Street, a block from Franklin Street, that dates to 1968 has been a popular place for bars through the years. In its basement for years was Trolls, a quintessential college bar where you could wear a woolen gym sweatshirt and a pair of jeans and feel right at home. And on the upper floor until 2017 was Bub O'Malley's, which had a 30-year run. But Chapel Hill has changed from a quaint college town to a more urban upscale environment. Bub O'Malley's closed in 2017. The building, with roughly 10,000 square feet, is owned by Polaris Enterprises, LLC, which is advertising the location as ideal for a brewery. Yep, it'll be interesting to see what happens. Senate bill would keep DHHS in Wake County. A bill to keep the North Carolina Department of Health and Human Services in Wake County is now in Governor Roy Cooper's hands, and how this plays out could have significant implications for Raleigh. Senate Bill 808 allots $15 million for the Dorothea Dix campus relocation. There have been some efforts to move parts of the government to other locations, but SB 808 ties it to Wake County. It's worth noting that a potential landing spot is along Blue Ridge Road, where the state owns a great deal of property, and there's now rising momentum to reimagine that hodgepodge of a corridor. What happens next remains to be seen, as the bill contains other sections involving Medicaid and coronavirus relief. A spokesman for Cooper says the governor is reviewing the legislation. Chapel Hill approves affordable housing. More affordable housing is coming to Chapel Hill after the town approved $5.25 million in support of affordable housing projects in town. The money will go to the construction of 278 affordable homes across five communities across Chapel Hill. Mayor Pam Heminger thanked the town for a bond for affordable housing approved in 2018, and she said she was excited to be using those funds to move forward on creating 278 new homes in Chapel Hill. The $5.25 million makes up a little more than half the $10 million allocated to the bond and reserve. The town funding includes $438,995 for 48 units at CASA Merritt Mill, $200,000 for 8 units on Johnson Street, $1.25 million for 100 units at Habitat for Humanity, Weaver's Grove, $55,313 for 2 units at Pee Wee Homes, Tiny Duplex, and $3.3 million for 120 units at Town of Chapel Hill, 220 Homestead Road. Zion Williamson lands on the cover of a popular game. A measure of the impact of former Duke University star Zion Williamson on the NBA is the fact that he's going to be one of three athletes on the upcoming cover of the NBA 2K21 video games. It's a dream come true. At those AAU tournaments, you're looking at the cover thinking, that's going to be me, Williamson told ESPN. For it to happen that fast, it's a huge honor. Williamson was averaging 23.6 points per game before the NBA season was halted. And as for the video version of NBA action, Williamson has played NBA 2K many times and calls it super dope. And now in the Triangle Business Journal, we turn to the On Technology and Transportation page, written by Lauren Onasorge. Behind the deal, a state's effort to win Grifols. Called by the codename Project 625, Grifols Therapeutics pitted North Carolina against the Lone Star State as it considered where to place its next-generation plasma facility. More than 1,000 pages of communications and other documents showcase North Carolina's persistence in closing the deal, as well as the Texas competition. A flurry of emails between North Carolina Department of Commerce officials from March up to the June announcement show the stakes, $351.6 million in investment in Johnston County, 300 jobs and average wages of more than $69,000. But while Grifols already had a serious presence in Clayton, the Spanish firm was evaluating its options outside of North Carolina, records show. In addition to Clayton, Griffiths considered two sites in San Marcos, Texas, where in addition to tax exemptions and other benefits in excess of $25 million, the company thought it could get more than $30 million in incentives. Texas has offered an estimated $41 million to $56 million in incentives, an application for the grant in North Carolina reads. Texas, the home of Grifols' only current plasma testing facilities in the U.S., had partnered with Grifols before, offering incentives in 2009, maintaining a great relationship with the company, and expending significant energy in the recruitment of this project, a grant application notes. Additionally, the Port of Houston acts as the primary exit point for Grifols' plasma and finished products being shipped overseas, according to that application. But North Carolina's persistence paid off on June 9 when Grifols announced it would build its planned specialized blood plasma facility and logistics center at its existing Clayton campus. In exchange for the investment, the state approved a job development investment grant worth nearly $5.2 million over 12 years. Policy Genius hires former leader of Google Fiber. As it works to fulfill its 350-job pledge in Durham, New York-based insurance technology firm Policy Genius has tapped a well-known local executive to run its Bull City operations. The company has hired Eric Garr, formerly the local head of Google Fiber, as the head of its property and casualty business. Garr says he's excited to take on the role, having been a Policy Genius customer. "By nature, I like to build things, he says. I've always thought of myself as a builder, and the chance to build another Durham headquarters for another great company was something I could not pass up. I think Policy Genius's mission is a really great one, to get people the insurance they need and to feel good about it." Advice from VCs on raising cash in 2020. Raising cash is a common pain point for entrepreneurs, made all the more challenging by the pandemic, but when meetings are being replaced with Zoom calls, an already complex mission can seem impossible. That's why a group of venture capitalists got together for a virtual coffee held by Virginia Center for Innovative Technology to talk about raising dollars in the new normal. Rami Assad, venture partner at Durham's Idea Fund Partners, says entrepreneurs must keep talking to investors. "Investors want to be able to connect the dots," he says, advising that entrepreneurs maintain multiple touch points to show venture partners you've got traction. Cody Nystrom, managing director of Durham's SJF Ventures, says it's more important than ever for startups to have a strong digital presence. SJF is taking best of lists and plugging them into its databases to find prospects, she says. "It may feel redundant to do lots of press releases," she says. "It may feel redundant to be on a lot of different lists, but I think right now that number of impressions is even more important than it ever was before." And finally, in a section called He Said It, we have a quote from Lance Ugla, CEO at IHS Market. "Better cost locations are Raleigh versus New York, or Manchester versus London, or Guggen versus Milan, or it's Gdansk versus Frankfurt." And that was Lance Ugla commenting on which acquired, or his CEO of IHS Market, which acquired market software firm Iprio Holdings. The firm will look to cut costs in 2020, and Raleigh could come out a winner. On a recent earnings call, Ugla said to expect a flexible work footprint as some will work from home. The firm will also continue to invest in better cost locations, he said. And now we turn to the On Real Estate page, written by Caleb Harshberger. Raleigh firms team up for big mixed-use development. Project plan for Wake Forest, Whitaker Mill Roads. A pair of real estate companies are partnering to conquer a large project in a part of Raleigh that's seeing a boom in development. Raleigh's SLI Capital and Atlas Stark are working on plans for the East End Market, PD, calling for up to 500 residential units and nearly 400,000 square feet of commercial space east of Five Points. The project is situated on 11.1 acres at the corner of Wake Forest and East Whitaker Mill Roads. "We've been working on the project for a couple of years and fortunately assembled enough land there to submit the master plan," says Brian Kane, managing partner of SLI Capital. "We're excited for the prospects for it." Altogether, the East End Market PD rezoning would allow for up to 344,508 square feet of office and medical space, 9,120 square feet of retail, 40,777 square feet of bar and restaurant space, and 500 residential units. These may include townhomes, apartments, or other types of multifamily units. When complete, Kane says the project will likely feature closer to 300,000 square feet of commercial space and around 475 residential units. The development will be built across five tracks, with the tallest up to 15 stories, three up to seven stories, and one up to five stories. We anticipate starting on the first phase later this year, in the next few months, Kane says. Number of Triangle properties on distressed watch list dips. After months of economic hardship, the number of Triangle properties on the CMBS, Commercial Mortgage-Backed Securities, watch list dipped for the first time since March, while some troubled properties fell further into delinquency. Across the Triangle, properties watchlisted for potential problems making CMBS loan payments dipped to 52 in June, down from 58 in May, a Business Journal's analysis of recent financial filings found. A July 1 report by commercial mortgage data tracker TREP found that across the country, the June delinquency rate surged to 10.32%, a 317 basis point jump over the May rate and the highest since 2012. In the Triangle, while most of the 52 properties on the watch list remain current on their loans, 14 are late or delinquent, with 8 that are 30 days or more late on payments and 4 more that are 60 days late or more. Those 4 include DoubleTree Rocky Mount, Cambria Suites Raleigh-Durham Airport, the Sheraton Raleigh, and the Beta Center in Raleigh. Property owners and managers at these properties did not return requests for comment. Each of these cited challenges from COVID-19 in financial filings. Longtime owner seeks to put 20-story tower in downtown Raleigh. The owners of a downtown Raleigh parking lot want to rezone the site to allow for up to 20 stories of mixed-use space as developers come calling. Earlier this year, Blunt Hourly Parking Service, LLC, filed a rezoning request with the city to rezone 0.95 acres at 220 East Morgan Street to allow for up to 20 stories of development. The company is owned by Beverly Blunt Smith, who runs it in partnership with her husband, Gordon, a longtime developer and real estate investor in Raleigh. "We'll sell it for development with the best proposal we see," Gordon Smith says. "It's time for me and Beverly to do what's best for this property for the next 50 years. The property abuts the Marbles IMAX at the corner of East Morgan and Person Streets. The Smiths have owned the site through one company or another for decades, stretching back to a time when Gordon Smith spearheaded the campaign to build the Explorers Museum, Marbles' predecessor, and was involved in assembling and swapping land for the project. After that work was finished, the Smiths continued to own the parking lot, among other properties, and as the city grew, so did developers' interest in the location at 220 East Morgan Street. New owner plans two towers, connected streetscape. The new owner of the historic Creamery property in Glenwood South is looking to rezone the site to allow for up to 40 stories of mixed-use development. But the Creamery isn't going anywhere. New York City-based Turnbridge Equities filed a request recently. The company bought the Creamery building and two adjacent properties in March for $34.7 million. Altogether, the site features 3.3 acres at 400 and 410 Glenwood Avenue and 501 Northwest Street, and includes the Creamery building, a two-story mixed-use building that dates back to the 1920s. Turnbridge Equities Managing Director Jason Davis says much of the new construction is expected to be centered on surface parking currently on the property. Development plans have yet to be finalized, but Davis says the company expects two towers, with at least one featuring a mix of office and residential. The company has yet to decide how many stories would be included in the project. Davis says this new project will preserve the Creamery, as new development will be built around the existing building. And finally, DRP completes Wade Park development. After years of construction and development, the build-out of an office park in Raleigh is now complete. Dominion Realty Partners has finished the Wade Office Park with the opening of Wade 5, a six-story, 209,145-square-foot building. Wade 5 is at and I should say that's Wade V, the Roman numeral 5, is at 5438 Wade Park Boulevard, just west of PNC Arena. Construction on Wade 5 began in October 2018. The building is 25% leased. Wades 1 through 4 are all 100% leased and total 400,000 square feet of office space. And with this article, there's also a quote from Andy Andrews, CEO of Dominion Realty Partners of Raleigh. Wade 5 was our third speculative development at Wade Park, something you don't see a lot in these times. And now we turn to Seth Thomas Gulledge's page on healthcare. Wake ranked lowest in North Carolina for average healthcare spending. New data released from North Carolina researchers shows more than $50 billion was spent by more than half of the state's population in 1 year, with the highest spending coming from some of the most rural counties in the state. Duke University, the Healthcare Cost Institute, and Blue Cross and Blue Shield of North Carolina have released an analysis of healthcare expenses for 6.3 million North Carolinians. The analysis uses data from insurance claims and represents about 60% of the state's population. The study looked at claims from 2016 to 2017 to determine an average between the 2 years. In total, the study population was responsible for more than $50 billion in healthcare spending in 1 year, averaging about $8,176 per person across the state. According to the report, the lowest average cost per resident was seen in Wake County, where the average resident paid $7,272 per year. Wake was followed close behind by Mecklenburg, Orange, and Guilford counties. The counties with the highest cost per resident were mainly rural areas of the state, such as Jones County, where the average resident spent $10,282 per year. Other counties with high averages include Bladen, Lenoir, Birdie, Chowan, and Polk. But average spending also depended heavily on the coverage for each patient. Statewide, the average Medicare patient spent $15,670, followed by Medicare Advantage at $11,199, and employer-sponsored insurance at $6,361. The lowest average was for Medicaid patients at $5,480. In Wake County, residents with employer-sponsored insurance paid $6,000 per year on average. Of that spending, the highest percentage, 32% or $1,900 per year, was spent on professional medical services such as behavioral health or office visits. In fact, Wake County had one of the highest average amounts for spending related to professional services. Wake's residents spent another $1,800 per year on outpatient care and just $930 on inpatient care. Prescription drugs accounted for 23% or $1,300 of the average employee-sponsored insurance. Durham and Orange counties reported similar spending for employee-sponsored insurance. In Orange, the average resident on employee-sponsored insurance paid $6,100 annually. And in Durham, the average resident on employee-sponsored insurance paid $5,900 annually. Liquidia to acquire Durham-based firm. Liquidia Technologies of Morrisville announced June 30 it has entered into an agreement to acquire Durham-based RareGen through an all-stock merger. RareGen targets the pulmonary arterial hypertension, or PAH, market through its agreement with Sandoz for its first-to-file generic of Remodulin. RareGen acquired the rights to promote the generic treprostinil injection in March 2019. Liquidia has filed for federal approval of its own PAH treatment, LIQ-861, an inhaled dry powder treatment. The RareGen acquisition, Liquidia CEO Neil Fowler says, creates tremendous value for Liquidia stockholders and, most importantly, patients. RareGen offers a knowledgeable team and scalable sales force, coupled with rights to commercialize an important PAH product that complements Liquidia's lead product candidate. Liquidia also announced a public offering of common stock, offering 9.3 million shares at $8 each. The offering is expected to close on July 2nd. The company anticipates gross proceeds of $75 million from the offering before deducting certain discounts and commissions. UNC study details pandemic's toll on mental health. A national survey conducted by UNC Chapel Hill researchers in collaboration with Harvard University has cataloged the emotional and psychological effect of the pandemic on the nation's psyche. The study concludes that emotional well-being of most adults in America has been broadly and substantially affected by COVID-19 and the related changes in life and society, but that subpopulations have suffered more than others. The study, published June 29, was informed by a national internet sample of 1,500 people. The study finds that younger adults and people who are of racial or ethnic minorities have been psychologically affected more than others by the pandemic. We saw that levels of concern or worry differed among different demographics, including age and race, Dr. Olafur Paulson says. Women and men tended to experience similar degrees of emotional impact associated with the pandemic on average, but younger people were more affected by it than older individuals, and the Hispanic population seemed to be the most impacted emotionally when comparing ethnic groups. More than 83% of respondents said they stayed home almost exclusively for at least several weeks during the pandemic, 70% said they were still staying home, and 38% reported either lost jobs or reduced income. Just 1.8% of those surveyed had been diagnosed with COVID-19, though an additional 4.8% reported suspecting they had it at some point, and just over 12% reported personally knowing someone who had died from the virus. In all, 55% of respondents reported that their lives had been more stressful over the past month. The results of the survey were collected no later than May 30, which researchers note was 5 days after the killing of George Floyd in Minnesota, prompting national unrest. And there's a number along with that article, 58%. The percentage frustrated about not being able to do what they usually enjoy doing. Novon says it will survive to next milestone. Executives at Novon say that it has secured enough funding to run a phase 3 trial of its lead asset, a treatment for molluscum, a viral skin infection. The trial was a previously unplanned path to regulatory approval of the drug. In January, the company disclosed that its previous phase 3 trials failed to achieve statistically significant results, though company officials said some of the trial data was encouraging. And along with that article, there is a number, $16.9 million. According to the Morrisville Company's filings with the U.S. Securities and Exchange Commission, the company raised the $16.9 million through stock purchase agreements with Aspire Capital Fund and the exercise of warrants sold in its $8 million public offering in March. And finally, there's a section called He Said It, the quote, "Primary care providers across North Carolina are in a financial crisis. We have a duty to act and a desire to act. Accelerate to Value will help them stay in business and improve their ability to provide the highest quality care to Blue Cross NC members and all of their patients." And that's from Dr. Rahul Rajkumar, Blue Cross and Blue Shield of North Carolina's chief medical officer, on the company's new deal with independent care providers to provide payments in exchange for signing on to its Value Used care plan. And now we turn to the On Business page written by Matthias Miller that has one article, Triangle to Feel Impact as Trump Restricts Work Visas. President Donald Trump's recent order to temporarily suspend a popular program for work visas will be felt in the Triangle. The executive order suspends new work visas through December 31, including the H-1B visa program, which universities and companies rely on for employing foreign talent that may not be available locally. Michael Schoenfeld, Vice President for Public Affairs and Government Relations at Duke University, says the move will put the United States technology and science companies behind other countries. Suspending H-1B visas means that we're going to lose out on some of the best, most innovative, and most entrepreneurial talent, he says. We can expect universities and companies that are engaged in science and technology to be impacted, and that will unfortunately put us behind other countries that are developing their own knowledge economies. According to a U.S. Citizenship and Immigration Services database, Duke University Medical Center and its affiliates have 16 continuing approvals in 2020 for workers who'd previously received an H-1B visa. NC State University has 17 and UNC Chapel Hill has 12. Locally, IBM has more than 500 workers using the H-1B program, the most in the region. Other Triangle companies with employees using H-1B visas include ICVIA, Red Hat, and PRA Health Services. In all, nearly 100 local companies have at least one employee using the program this year. An Envoy Global survey found that 93% of U.S. companies said outsourcing foreign employees was important for talent acquisition strategy. Major tech companies have already spoken out against Trump's order. "We oppose the administration's short-sighted action," Amazon said in a statement. "Preventing high-skilled professionals from entering the country and contributing to America's economic recovery puts America's global competitiveness at risk." Last fall, a group of 63 CEOs, as well as deans from a broad cross-section of business schools across the country, including Duke, UNC, and NC State, signed an open letter calling for immigration reform to support the national workforce amid concern for stricter H-1B approvals. "We, at some sense, are sort of at the front line," Douglas Shackelford, dean of UNC Kenan Flagler Business School, said at the time. "We see a lot of this very best talent before anybody else does. As we see that talent pool drying up, we're in a good position to sound the alarm." And now in the Triangle Business Journal, we turn to the viewpoint page. Triangle Business Journal welcomes letters to the editor. And we'll read the column, "The Editor's Notebook," written by the editor-in-chief of the Triangle Business Journal, Sugata Mukherjee. The headline, "Recent Virus Surge Will Force Congress to Offer Additional Stimulus for Businesses." With COVID-19 cases once again surging among communities in the South and the West, government officials are beginning to claw back the reopening of bars, hotels, restaurants, and other businesses. Understandably, it will have an effect on the broader U.S. economy, especially if these consumer-facing businesses are ordered to shut down for a longer period of time. With millions of small businesses already having spent their government assistance money, Paycheck Protection Program, Economic Injury Disaster Loan, or being close to exhausting their financial resources, one has to wonder about the need for these businesses to keep their workers employed. On July 2, the Labor Department announced 4.8 million jobs were added last month on top of the 2.5 million jobs in May. That's a good sign, especially after almost 21 million jobs vanished in April. But the trend is not enough to jumpstart the recovery. Leisure and hospitality jobs accounted for 2-plus million of those gained last month, followed by retail. Right now, precisely those sectors are being asked to shut down operations by various state governments. A data feed for Homebase, a tech company that administers time cards for more than 100,000 small businesses, concluded that fewer employees worked in the final week of June than the previous 3 weeks. So even if the current jobs numbers show improvement, it simply will not be enough as business shutdowns continue across several industries at an alarming rate. For example, Homebase notes in Arizona, the total number of employees working at small businesses is down some 31% from the pre-pandemic levels. And across many states, those levels have started to go down even faster in the past couple of weeks. That's why another stimulus plan for businesses is inevitable, because there's still more than $130 billion left from the $660 billion PPP initiative. Congress has approved extending the deadline for businesses to apply for an additional 6 weeks. Initially, the PPP was set to expire June 30. So why the six-week extension? Because that gives lawmakers in Washington, D.C. time to structure another stimulus package before leaving for the summer break in August. It is not clear exactly what form the new stimulus package will take, but it definitely involves the government printing more money and going into further debt. Now, some have opined that there are alternative breaks, such as cuts in capital gains or forgiveness of federal taxes for businesses and individuals alike. But in the end, like always, it is easier to print money. That is precisely why we have some $20-plus trillion in debt. Small businesses will readily admit that they can use additional help, but unlike how PPP was structured, not every business is losing revenue to a point that they have to shut down. If Congress takes time to dissect the underlying numbers of these stressed businesses, the next round of stimulus money should take the following factors into consideration. Businesses under 100 employees, minority-owned businesses, businesses experiencing 50% loss in annualized revenue in the past 3 months, and businesses that are affected by social distancing. PPP may have failed in that regard. S&P Global Ratings conducted a study that concluded about 60% of the 1.6 million businesses that received the first round of PPP were not strongly affected by social distancing. As we have talked about before, studies from Robert Fairley, a professor of economics at University of California, Santa Cruz, show the shutdown rate of businesses from February through April has been historic. About 41% of black businesses shuttered during that time frame, and the overall number of working business owners fell from 15 million to 11.7 million, a 22% drop. It's clear that at this moment, Washington is not debating whether businesses need another boost. That train has left the station. Now they are debating exactly how much of a boost and who should be the recipient. And another thing, it's an election year. And now we turn to the executive voice, focusing on Cyril Broderick Jr. The headline, "He's an Advocate for Black Business in Durham," written by Cameron Snipes. The Greater Durham Black Chamber of Commerce is a nonprofit organization with the mission to invest in the growth and development of the black entrepreneur, the black business, and the black business ecosystem. The chamber is led by a 17-member board of directors and a small group of staffers. Cyril C.J. Broderick Jr. is the chamber's president and CEO, and it's his job to bring the group's vision to life. Though COVID-19 has thrown a wrench in those plans, the chamber has pivoted. Broderick led the charge to design and execute a series of 14 workshops to support businesses in need of assistance as a result of the pandemic. Currently, the GDBCC has 170 members, up 20 from the year prior, making it one of the 25 largest chambers of commerce in the Triangle. Broderick joined the GDBCC as a member just 2 years after the chamber was formed. He also works as a consultant with the Equity Paradigm, a racial equity consulting group founded by his wife, Alexa. Triangle Business Journal caught up with him to learn how he's navigating the chamber through the pandemic and the swells of racial tension. Tell us a little about the Greater Durham Black Chamber of Commerce. The Greater Durham Black Chamber of Commerce exists to pursue economic equity, investing in the growth and development of black entrepreneurs, black businesses, and the black business ecosystem. The GDBCC was incorporated in 2008, and I have been a member since 2010. And actually, we'll have to stop there as we're running out of time for this week's episode of the Triangle Business Journal. Hope you enjoyed it. I'm Derek Frost, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. The Triangle Business Journal is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. Today's program is generously underwritten by Brian Lee Funeral Homes, located in Raleigh, Garner, and Anger. They can be reached at 919-832-8225. They believe every life is unique and deserves to be honored so that every funeral is as unique and special as the person it represents. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138. So long until next time, and thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.